KXU News Time, 9:07. What's up, everybody? It's Dale Desmond. This is Southern U Talk. Want to hear from you guys, whatever topics you're thinking of. If it's something we're talking about, something you're talking about, we want to hear from you. The new text line, 435-261-4540, 435-261-4540. You can call in 673-5890. I think you got headphones. I got them for you now. In studio, sports director Andy Thompson. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Good to be here.
I love it. I love it. I just want a quick mention that I am now defending champion of the Radio Peeps Fantasy Football League.
By .0, whatever the heck it was, Dale. Point the people two. Champion because you knocked down the kid who's won it like 4 years in a row. We were all rooting for you, and I'm just gleaming today.
.2 tenths of a point.
Oh, my gosh.
I took the fantasy football. David Cordero from the city was in here last week. Totally, he just went off. He was like, you have liberated the people and have created a wonderful place to be a part of fantasy football nowadays.
It was an unbelievable thing you did. And I was going to say, I was in this year. I was locked in. I made sure I had my kicker in every week and a defense and all the requisites. And I was still horrible.
That's where we want to start. With the NFL, AT, the NFL playoff field is all set. Now, last night, if you didn't watch, now, what I want to do is create a situation for if you're driving to work today and you're like, I don't know, guys in the board meeting are going to be talking about it. I want to know what to talk about. Steelers-Ravens last night, they were trading absolute haymakers.
Yeah.
Touchdown. Nobody could stop anybody right at the end.
Yes.
And then it just a heartbreaking way, as I know, to lose a game going wide right.
Well, how insane that Rodgers makes the play. There's like 50 seconds left. He's 49 years old or whatever. He throws the bomb into the corner of the end zone. Touchdown. What an amazing vindication. The Steelers made the right decision. He's going to win the North. Then the dope misses the PAT.
Yeah.
So now they're only up two with 40-something seconds, whatever it was. Yep. And obviously, here comes Lamar, makes that great pass to Likely, and easily gets into field goal range.
Yeah.
They got that rookie kicker, wide right. Just a brutal way to go out for Baltimore fans.
It is tough. You and I were talking off air. You feel like, and it was a weird thing, that you felt like they're – You didn't really feel like Lamar or Harbaugh were super bummed about it.
I mean, this is me kind of reading into nothing, just body language and stuff like that. But I just feel like the Ravens and Lamar and Harbaugh are kind of done together. And Lamar's been out. He made it, made himself healthy so he could play in this game. But it really stinks for them. Because in a year when Mahomes, the big bad witch, is out, this is the time for Lamar to go to a Super Bowl, and they just don't have the mojo going this year. So I think, and he was asked after the game at some point, what do you think about your future? Do you want to comment? And usually a player will be like, oh, I'm coming back,
and
I want my coach back.
Yeah.
We've been through everything. I've had an MVP or whatever, and we've had success. Of course we're coming. He said, I don't want to comment on that right now.
Yeah.
So I just think it was a bizarre year for the Ravens and for one of the best players in the league, and they're probably both sick of each other and wanting to move on. And I think you could maybe look into that, their body language at the end, of just being like, okay, I'm going to go shake this guy's hand. I'm going to go shake Mike Tomlin's hand and go to a beach somewhere to get away from this.
All right, so looking at the AFC, where I'm super interested, my Buffalo Bills get into the number 6 seed. We got to travel to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
The year, you just said it, the year that the ding-dong, the witch is dead.
Yeah.
Mahomes is out.
Yeah.
Burrow's out.
Yeah.
Lamar is out. It should be freewheeling time for Josh Allen and the Bills.
It's Josh Allen and a bunch of rejects, Dale. You've got to do it this year, buddy. You can't flop. I mean, you got Jacksonville round one on the road. That's fine.
Yep.
But you got to go this year, buddy.
This is it. I think this is it. I said this for five years in a row. This is our, it's now or never. This is our, the window's going to close.
Yeah.
And we end up back there.
How much did you love those uniforms yesterday?
I don't know
how
the Bills uniforms.
Yeah, just the old school throwbacks. It looks so good. It's like the Denver doing their old school stuff this year.
Yeah, it was. So it was the last game at the old Highmark Stadium. They're going to open the new Highmark right across the street next season.
Yeah,
and so it was a lot of nostalgia. It was a throwback. Those red '90s Bills helmets, the throwback jerseys, and the helmets. I'm not going to lie. I shed a tear or two yesterday watching some of the previews and then the afterwards singing and all that and wishing I was there. My brothers were there. It was the whole thing. Are the Broncos and the Patriots overrated?
I think that the Broncos are overrated, and it's hard to say because they're so dominant and their defense is the best in the league.
They're so scrappy, winning all these 11 games within one score.
Yeah, exactly. And that might be an indicator. The most important indicator is, you know, sometimes, like that was the Chiefs last year.
Yeah,
they won all these games, ugly and close games, and then they, you know, didn't have what it took to take it all the way. So usually defense is the stable part of a team, and like, oh, if your defense is this good, then you can. But I think the NFL playoffs is all—it's all a charade. Everything else about the coaching and the defense and the turnover margin—it only matters who your quarterback is.
Yeah.
If you have the best quarterback, you are the team that's going to go the furthest in the playoffs. The Eagles last year may be a little bit of an anomaly,
yeah,
is the word I was looking for there. But I don't think Bo Nix is that guy. And I think if it's a showdown between Nix and your guy, for example, to get to the Super Bowl, I think, you know, you got to go with the better quarterback.
Because it's going to be the road goes through Denver.
Yeah.
You know, they're the number one seed. I look at the strength of schedule over this last year. The number one easiest schedule were the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
They played St. Mary's of the Deaf and Blind every week. and barely got through a lot of these games. They won, you know, convincingly on some of them, but the Broncos had the second easiest schedule in the NFL and struggled to win every, including yesterday. They pulled it out, you know, they were smart at the end of the game and it looked, that game score wasn't as close as, you know, the game was closer than the score reflected.
Yeah, I just think we get fooled by the regular season in a bunch of different sports. Like the NBA, the regular season is a complete sham every year because nobody cares.
You're right. And load there's management a thousand stuff. Games.
The NFL matters more because there's less games and it's, you know, you want to get into the playoffs and win your division. But I still think there are regular season frauds every year. And I think the Patriots might be even more of a fraud than the Broncos. Even though I love Vrabel, I think he's a great coach, and the Titans have got to be feeling like the biggest idiots in the league over the last this year. Obviously, with him doing so well,
I can't believe in the NFC the Carolina Panthers made it.
Isn't that amazing?
That just so blows my mind. Do you think the system is flawed where you can get like automatic 1, 2, 3, 4? The division winners are automatically in. They can be 2 and
yes.
16
yes.
and get in because everybody else in the division, but then you've got teams not making it that are, you know, 12-5 or something like 12-6 or whatever.
It is crazy, yes, and the Panthers are, you know, it's crazy to think that they're even in the playoffs, but you've got to respect the NFL for respecting divisions, unlike college football, who has no respect for conferences.
Right.
It's like, oh, wait, no, you won your conference. No, you stink. We're going to put 9 SEC teams instead. We don't care that you're a powerful conference. You've got to have a league that respects divisions and conferences. And so that's, if you win your division, this is the NFL. You get to go to the playoffs. Yeah. I agree with the setup, and I think college football should mirror it more closely because of how ridiculous the committee. Anytime you involve human beings in selecting anything, it's horrible. The NFL's got it right. But it is bizarre when this happens. What do you think about that matchup, though?
Which matchup?
The Panthers in week one.
Oh, what it ends up doing is it ends up making the 4-5 matchup almost an automatic. That's almost like a 1-7 matchup, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got a team that squeaked in there just because they were the least crappy of the crappy teams in a division. Look at Houston. I mean, they're gonna take on the Steelers, and it's gonna be a bloodletting.
Yes,
I mean, Aaron Rodgers. I Lord bless him. I don't like him any less than any other guy, but I don't see him making it out of the first with that.
Yeah, that pass rush.
With the way that they treated Josh Allen, I don't see Aaron Rodgers making it through the first half.
Yeah.
So, I'm interested to see how that goes. The playoffs, they begin on Saturday, the two NFC games, and then you got the three on Sunday. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it's all just a bunch of, you know, BS and the Patriots end up in the AFC Championship game with the Broncos and so forth, and we'll see how it goes. I think Seattle is legit. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba and that defense is legit. I think I don't know. I get the feeling that Sam Darnold has just kind of found himself in good fitting positions. He's not a great quarterback. He just happens to be a good spot. I mean, he struggled forever in all these different places he was at, and then gets into a good spot, and then, okay, I got a really good receiver and a good defense, so I look better than I really am.
Yeah, and you know, it's I talked about regular season frauds a little bit. I think, you know, last year Darnold in Minnesota had this amazing season. They were so great, and then he goes and, you know, gets baptized by, I think it was the Rams, and just, it was like, oh, his career is over. He's horrible.
Yeah.
It's all been revealed. We played 17 games and won 14 or whatever, had this great regular season. Weird stuff happens in the playoffs. But this year, I hope, I kind of root for a guy like that who gets a second and a third chance this time to do well and get the monkey off his back in the playoffs. And it looks like, you mentioned, he's got the best receiver in the NFL maybe in this great defense. So I like their chances as the one seed.
I like it as well. Let's pivot. Let's look at here locally, closer to home. There's been a real coaching carousel.
Yeah.
Between Coach Kyle Whittingham left Utah to go to Michigan. Guy, he said he was going to retire. Everyone's like, oh, he's retiring. Did you see this coming?
No.
Were you?
It's completely surreal.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that he's the coach at Michigan. I think what happened, at least my view on it, is it's kind of the old Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien thing that happened, where they tell Leno, hey, we got this guy behind you that we don't want to lose. So they kind of force Leno out, even though he's still number one and doing really well. And I just feel like Whittingham felt like, oh, you guys seem to kind of want me to move on, so I'll move on.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of got some spite in his belly, even though he'll never say that about Utah, who treated him so well and he had his whole career there. I think he kind of prematurely kind of left the program in a good spot, go 10-2 this year. And then he gets a call from the Yankees and is like, oh, I've got to go to Michigan. This is the biggest brand in college football.
Yeah.
But, you know, the issue that I see with Whittingham is that he's a regular guy. Like, he's a nice human being. He's well-rounded. And the Big Ten is full of psychopaths. If you want to win the Big Ten championship and do well, Kurt Cignetti is an alien, and he might be the greatest coach to ever exist on this planet.
Right.
What he's done the last 2 years at Indiana, who's been the worst power team in the country forever.
Punching bag forever. The only reason they're in there is because of their basketball.
Yes. Even Lee Corso couldn't get them to be competent 50 years ago when he was the coach. So Cignetti's a freak. Jim Harbaugh, to win the Big Ten, had to cheat at everything he did. Urban Meyer is a maniac. So I just look at all of these coaches in the Big Ten who have had success, and you could probably say the same thing about the SEC. And it's like, wow, in order to reach that top gear and win the Big Ten, which is what's going to be expected of Whittingham in year one, and not only win the Big Ten, but go to the playoff and make a run at the national championship, you've got to be a maniac. And Whittingham, to me, just seems like a regular guy who might not have that in him. And the other false kind of trap door that's being set for him is that Michigan's like, we've had this disaster run with Harbaugh, with the Connor Stallion stuff, and then Sharon Moore with his stuff. We need somebody to come in here and right the ship. It's kind of like Bronco Mendenhall at Utah State.
Right.
We've had these assaults. We've had these issues off the field. We need somebody who's mature who will come in with a side part and sit down and correct all this stuff. And at Utah State, that's actually true. Wow. They really want a coach to come in and just right the ship and have a steady experience for a few years and win six games and go to a bowl game. At Michigan, that's completely false. If Whittingham goes in and wins eight games next year, he's on the hot seat. They don't care. They want him to win the Big Ten. So he's that's a big challenge.
So do you see Whittingham being successful at Michigan? Because I look at it as there's three seasons. We talked about this off air a little bit. With Ohio State, Michigan, there's three seasons. There's the regular season, there's Ohio State, Michigan, then there's the postseason. You can do good in the regular season. You can do good in the postseason.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what's his name at Ohio State.
Ryan Day.
Rosy Cheeks himself.
Yeah.
He's done really good in the regular season. He's done great with national championships. He had a hard time beating Michigan, and he was in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Everybody was calling for his head. There's zero margin for error.
Yeah.
I think, especially in that rivalry. How do you see Whittingham holding his own there?
I agree. And Ryan Day won the national championship last year, and people still wanted him fired because he lost to Michigan that same year. It's insane. Obviously, Whittingham has had success in the what I think is the biggest rivalry in the West, BYU and Utah. So I'm not as concerned about his rivalry. I think he'll do fine against Ohio State. And I think, you know, at Utah, he's known as a developer. He gets a two-star, a three-star kid and develops them really well.
Yeah.
Now he's starting with four- and five-star kids. And the question to me is, you've got to go in the Big Ten. You can't lose. You can't have a 9-win season. In Utah, if you had a 9-win season and maybe you win a 10th in the bowl game, that was considered a success. At Michigan, that's not the case. You can't lose. It's easier to get into the playoff from the Big Ten, so maybe there's a little bit of pressure release there. One of the things I was saying to you before was there's got to be some appeal to a guy who's an old school guy like Whittingham, who's living in this new era of transfer portal and NIL, where you've got to constantly be texting 18-year-olds,
right,
sucking up to their parents, promising them money, like having this an Excel spreadsheet with all the millions of dollars and where it's going.
Yeah.
Like at Michigan, they have an apparatus. They've got an infrastructure. That's like a pro organization.
Yeah.
So part of it has got to be, okay, I'm unloading all of this crap and stress. They say they've got it all taken care of. They got Dave Portnoy. They've got the Ellison guy, who's a billionaire, paying for all these players, and a GM and all that stuff that's going to be taken care of. So I think the professional structure that Michigan has as far as player acquisition and retention and all that stuff has got to be like, okay, I could just be a coach again here at Michigan. But the pressure is, you know, so much more than it was here at Utah.
Let's pivot to real quick in a couple more minutes here, the college football playoff. If I were you rewind a few weeks and the seeding is all in and they give you the final seeding, and I am a 2, 3, or 4 seed, I'm gonna pee my pants.
Yeah, you're excited.
Because I feel like all the 2, 3, and 4 seeds are always bounced early.
Oh, yes.
All these seeds are always, you know, these 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seeds are making it through to the semis. And here we sit here's today's sign of the apocalypse, okay?
Yeah.
We got Indiana. We've got Indiana as the number one seed.
Yeah.
Facing off against a 5 seed. And then on the other side, you've got a 6 and a 10.
Yeah.
Today's sign of the apocalypse. Is this how the committee thought this would turn out, do you think?
Stinks.
I mean, what do they
this
think?
This whole system stinks. I'm with you, Dale. The problem is the top 4 teams deserve to have a home game. Instead, they get a bye, which everybody wants a bye. But then you stink. You've been off for 3 weeks in college football. And then the record, it was at 1-7 at some point. Teams that get byes were like 1-7 since the 12-team college football playoff.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, you're absolutely right. These teams that get byes should be shaking in their boots. But it's cool because Ole Miss is stinks and has never won, a national championship in the last whatever years. Same with Indiana. Same with Miami hasn't been good in years. They're a prestige program. Oregon hasn't won a championship. They They've been in contention a lot. So I'm just happy Georgia's out and Alabama's out and some of the Ohio State. Like, it's going to be new blood this year, which is cool. And I find myself rooting for Cignetti because he's at this impossible school, and he's just, I mean, when he beat Alabama 38-3 in the Rose Bowl, that was one of the greatest things
days of my life.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was awesome.
So we're looking at probably Indiana facing off either against a 6 or a 10 seed, so which means that in 2 weeks from tonight, the national championship game is probably going to be an absolute speed bag.
Yeah.
It's going to be ugly. I don't see it. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see it going well.
I mean, I hope that's the case. I mean, their line against Oregon, I think, is 4.5 or 5 or something like that. Yeah. And then, I don't know if you've seen this Indiana quarterback talk, but he's like AI. Like, he's like talking to ChatGPT.
Giving all the company lines.
Well, and he's just a bizarro. He's an alien, too. They've got two aliens in Indiana, the coach and the quarterback. It's hilarious to watch this kid talk. He's a complete spaz.
Yeah.
But I'm rooting for him. I hope win it all.
I like it. Well, we'll see how it goes. The semifinal games are Thursday night and Friday night with the national championship coming up in 2 weeks from tonight. Andy Thompson, our sports director, taking a few minutes. Thanks, buddy. A Monday morning quarterback right here. Here on KDXU, coming up here in a couple of minutes, what in the world is happening with Venezuela? People in Venezuelans and Utah are happy. We'll talk about the people that aren't happy about this and why it's potentially a problem. We'll talk about it in just a few minutes. KDXU News Time, 9:29. All right, KDXU News Time, 9:33. Special thanks to Andy Thompson for spending some time with us, getting us up to date. A Monday morning, a true Monday morning quarterback right there. So if you're driving to work today, you're like, I don't have any idea what's happening in the NFL. I want to sound like what I'm talking about. Well, Andy can get you in ship shape on a Monday morning. He's got it all. The guy is an absolute genius. Love having him in studio. He's welcome here anytime. We'll have many mornings going forward to kind of get you up to date on things. All right, there's a lot going on, guys. We were talking about this all morning long earlier in Southern Utah's morning news. Members of Utah's Venezuelan community, they gathered this weekend after the news broke of President Nicolas Maduro's capture and his wife in a major military operation, huge military operation. They swept in, dropped, you know, it was either Delta Force or Navy SEALs, you know, did the whole, you know, you've seen it on the movies, rappel down from the helicopter, go get the guy, extract him, put him on a helicopter, fly him out. Little to no resistance and zero casualties on the U.S. side. I'm not sure on the other side. I haven't seen that yet. What I am interested in is the reaction. I am interested in the reaction of people. And if you guys have thoughts on this, I would love to hear from you. I know not a super high Venezuelan population in southern Utah. But I would love to hear from you guys, whatever side you're on. Whether you're in favor of it, whether you think it's a terrible idea, whether you're concerned about things, I want to hear from you guys. You can call us up, 673-5890, 673-5890. The text line is always open, 435-261-4540. The reaction from, we were talking about this morning, from the Venezuelan Alliance of Utah. Several members of the Venezuelan Alliance of Utah getting together, calling it a miracle. Same with Salt Lake County Councilman Carlos Moreno, calling it a miracle after decades of hope for political change. Now, I was reading on several different areas today, reading about the people that are not okay with this, that think it's terrible. Every time I look on the news, and all weekend long I've seen this, people that are not okay with it, we're not Venezuelan. they were people like looking on the, for instance, I just grabbed the KUTV website. The people not okay with it. Not Venezuelan. I mean, there's people that say this is an act of war. It's illegal. It's we should not be okay with this. Here's a direct quote from Denise Weaver. Doesn't sound Venezuelan to me. An organizer with the People's Freedom Party. We are out here to demand an immediate end to the bombing campaign in Venezuela. There's not a bombing campaign. We went and got a narco terrorist. The return of Maduro to Venezuela and an end to the war on Venezuela. This is blatantly illegal, says Denise Weaver, an organizer in the People's Freedom Party. Denise Weaver. I wonder, can we get Denise on the phone? I want to know what it's like growing up in this mean streets of Caracas, Denise. Tell me about that. Tell me why you think that Nicolas Maduro should be returned to Venezuela. Tell me why two Democratic presidents issued arrest warrants for Nicolas Maduro. What was it, $25 and then $50 million, something like that? Bounty on this guy's head. President Obama put a bounty on this guy's head, $25 million. I have to check my numbers, but I think that's right. And then President Biden doubled down, $50 million bounty on this guy's head. And here's Denise Weaver saying, you need to return Maduro to Venezuela. Really? Really? Okay. I haven't heard anything from President Obama. Haven't heard a word from Grandpa Biden one way or the other. Now, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I've always been a huge fan of everything that Trump has done, because I'm not, and I won't. I think there's plenty of things that were either in bad taste or done out of arrogance or done out of whatever. But I do think a lot of the things that Trump does are good things. I think the way he does it are terrible. We talked about it earlier in the show about I think Trump has badly wrapped packages. He's like a dad that's on Christmas Eve, goes out and gets good presents for his wife, but puts it in the Walmart bag. That's Trump, in my mind. He goes and gets her a 5-carat diamond, and leaves it wrapped in with a receipt in it, leaves it in the bag from the jewelry store. I think Trump does some good stuff. It's just his packaging could use a little polishing. You know what I'm saying? I'm not an apologist. I think what he said about Rob Reiner was deplorable. I think the day that he died, the day that Rob Reiner was murdered by his own son, and his wife was murdered by their own son, and he had a beef still and had to bring that up, I think that's terrible. But I think this was a good thing to do. I think it was something that had to be done, and it was corroborated 100% by a couple of Democratic presidents that put these bounties on this guy's head. What do you guys think? All right. Yes, this is I have texts coming in. This is the Southern Utah text line. You can text me 435-261-4540. You can call me up. I'd love to hear what you guys think. If you think I'm crazy, if you think I'm way out in left field, I want to know why Denise Weaver has anything to say about sending a dictator who was voted out of office and said, I'm not leaving, voted out overwhelmingly and said, I'm not leaving. I want to stay here. And then two of these guys, of these presidents, have put bounties on this guy's head. President Trump does something about it. And now Denise Weaver has the, I don't want to call it stones, but I don't know. I mean, who knows where she's at? How in the world can you do that? Can you say send him back? A lot of texts coming in. You guys can text me 435-261-4540. The call-in line always has been 673-5890. Let's see. I totally agree with Marco Rubio, who said he made it very clear we aren't going to allow our adversaries to fund their attacks on the West by monetizing oil in our hemisphere. We will exert our power and take the oil and financially starve the axis of evil. Maduro is a dictator and needs to be held accountable for all his despicable acts. Now, do I think the U.S. is rubbing their hands, just waiting to get their fingers and their hands on Venezuelan oil? I mean, I hope not. I don't know. What I do hope is they are going to put it into stable hands and like Marco Rubio said, not allow them to fund attacks on our country and our allies. Because Venezuela, all the neighboring countries, Colombia, next door neighbors, buddies, they don't have the oil resources that Venezuela has. What do they have? They got a different resource. They got the nose candy. They got the the Colombia nose powder. And they need each other, or have coexisted well with each other in funding each other's debauchery. And so the U.S. put a stop to it this weekend. It was a circle of this downward cycle. The drugs, the oil, just helping each other out. And so Trump said, nope, we're gonna cut this cycle right here. Let's see. We've got a text that says, we've got people living underground homeless in U.S. cities. We're talking about fixing Venezuela and getting involved with other countries' leaders. How do we justify that? And where should the priority really be? I like that. That's a very good point. I'm not a policymaker. I'm not an apologist, I don't think. I do think that there definitely needs to be a focus on domestic policies. And I think there's been some of that, but I imagine the argument to that will be, well, if we can cut off the drug involvement, that will help with the homelessness in our American cities. If people aren't drugged out, they're not all hopped up, they're not wasting their money on drugs, and they're spending money on paying their bills and buying nice clothes, they can get a good job, and furthering their place in life. I mean, I've never been on drugs. I've never gone down that road, thank goodness. So I guess I've just taken it for granted that, gosh, I don't need cocaine to get me through to have a successful life. And so we're looking at how can we cut this off and make this not a how can we break this cycle? How can we break this cycle of bringing in drugs, dragging people down, taking their money and spending it on things that they, you know, I imagine there's rich people that spend tons of money on drugs. They I guess if you, you know, if you have it, but if you're homeless and you're spending, you know, your money on drugs, I mean, we've all heard stories one way or another about the guy out here at Walmart on Telegraph. Somebody like that you don't want to give them money, afraid they're going to go buy booze and drugs. That's fine. That's your prerogative to not give them money. I like to keep keep gift cards, you know, free Big Mac, free extra value meal, whatever. keep that in my car. And people will say, well, that's just as bad as giving them drugs. Come on. Let's not go there. We want to hear from you guys. 435-261-4540, the text line. Or you can call us up 673-5890, 673-5890. Talking about the local reaction from the Utah Coalition. I want to get that right. It's the Venezuelan Alliance of Utah applauding the removal of Carlos Moreno. I'm sorry, of Nicolas Maduro and other people not Venezuelan having a problem with it just because is it a Trump action? Anything Trump does, I hate it. Anything Trump does, I want to stomp on it. I don't care if it's good or bad. If it's Trump, it's always bad. Orange Man, this guy I follow on Twitter, always making fun of people like this. They call him Orange Man Bad. Orange Man Bad. I don't care what he does. I don't care how it looks. Orange Man Bad. All right, phone lines are open. 673-5890, 673-5890. Let's get to the phones. Good morning. You're on KDXU. Who's this?
Thank you. This is Grant. My issue with this, I have a disagreement with him doing this in Venezuela, not necessarily because it didn't bring order to the world and it's not a good thing.
Yep.
It's more an issue for me that I don't like the extent of the power that the executive branch has gathered over the course of since the Patriot Act, really since George Bush.
Okay.
Prior to George Bush, the president didn't have authority to just make random military strikes and capture people out of things. I understand that that helps in this place. We could do this in three quarters of the African nations. We could do it in a third of the Asian nations to just for whatever it is. But I don't think, as a traditionalist and one who likes the original intent of the Constitution, I don't like the executive branch having that much power. If we remember back to when Trump ran the first time, one of the things that he ran on is that Barack Obama had the audacity to make 19 executive orders during the 8 years of his tenure. You got Joe Biden making hundreds. Now Trump's making hundreds. I don't like the idea of them being able to do that because it kind of gives them the monarch of the day. And every time the president changes, the policies of the entire nation wildly switch. And it creates an instability. I don't think that the president should be able to have this kind of power. He's already done it. That's what it is. But I think that needs to be curtailed because if you like what Trump's doing now, you're not going to like what the next president does. And yeah, inevitably, once you set that precedence, that's what's going to happen. And these executive orders are going to start going towards gun makers. They're going to start going towards a lot of different things. And that's my major issue with this.
Yeah.
The executive should not have this kind of power.
So, and to you, it's not even about, it's completely not across political lines. To you, it's whoever is in that seat should not have carte blanche, executive order power. Is that what you're saying?
That's my statement on that, especially when using military power to topple governments. I mean, that's kind of a big thing. For me, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. You may like it now, but we're going to scream about it in another 4 years or 8 years or whenever somebody else does something that we don't like. It just sets the precedence, and we can't have that.
Guys,
that's my opinion on it.
I appreciate that. Thank you for calling in. I was just looking at this about the number of executive orders, and it is a thing that you can have, I don't say carte blanche, but you could be right up there. There's a lot of things that the executive order has power to do. Just looking at these, President Obama wrote 276 executive orders. President Trump did 220 his first presidency. Joe Biden did 162. I don't know how many he actually wrote, how many were the auto pen. And President Trump so far is up to 226 in the first year. So that's quite a bit. That's quite a bit. And it seems like he said, that caller, I think his name was Grant. He called in, he said that it seems like it's going to get worse because it's almost like, as you get more comfortable with things, like, oh, okay. It's like driving down Bluff Street at 50 miles an hour. Ooh, I could do this. I'm going to go 55. I'm going to go 60. I'm going to go 70 every time you go down Bluff Street. Come on. It could get out of hand. And I think that is an interesting point, something that we definitely want to keep an eye on. All right, now, KDXU News Time, 9:51. Take a quick break. Coming back, talking about the new mayor coming into town, coming into our mayorship, if you will. Going to be inducted today. We'll get you ready for that coming up here in about 3 or 4 minutes. KDXU News Time, 9:51. Good morning. I'm Dale Desmond. This is Southern U Talk on KDXU. KDXU News Time, 9:54. Good morning. This is Southern U Talk with me, Dale Desmond. Thank you guys for joining us this morning. With Men at Work. Who can it be now knocking at my door? That's the U.S. military come to take you to jail. Nicolas Maduro and his wife over the weekend hauled out, taken to, they're going to face court here in about 7 or 8 minutes. We'll be watching what happens there. Yeah, a lot on that. One quick text that came in. This is just another example, another good thing for the world and for the U.S. that proves no matter what Trump does, the establishment has TDS. That's not the internet, people. I've heard Trump can cure cancer, and the Democrats would have something bad to say about it. And I think it goes the same way with when President Biden, President Obama were in office. You know, it didn't matter what good things they do. It's the other side. Oh, we got to poo-poo on it. Is there any point where as Americans we can go, I didn't like Joe Biden, but I do like this, that, and this other thing that he did. I didn't like Barack Obama, but I like these things. I don't like President Trump, but X, Y, and Z. Denise Weaver, who's never, I don't know if she's even spent a day in Venezuela, is backing a guy that was, A, voted out of office, refused to leave, B, two presidents put a bounty on his head, and now she wants to send him back. Okay, Denise, let's make sure you're not running for any kind of office anytime soon. Let's pivot here to some local stuff. A very cool thing happening. I guess it depends on who your favorite candidate was. The new era in the St. George City mayorship begins today. 34th mayor Jimmy Hughes will be officially sworn in at noon today. Hey, Michelle Randall, she was appointed after John Pike was stolen away, if you will, to work with the governor, and then Michelle, man, did a good job. She won election, served her term, and now Jimmy Hughes takes over as the new mayor. It'll happen today at the city council chambers, the new city council chambers. If you haven't been there yet, you got to go check it out. Noon today, where the swearing in will happen. And then it'll also open a 2-week process, an application process for anybody that wants to can apply to be appointed to the city council. If you want to get on there, you can go and apply. You've got 2 weeks to do it. I would assume we will see several, if not most, if not all of those that did not get voted onto the city council, a la Jamie Levitt, Greg Allred, that made it through the primary. I know for sure we'll see some of them. Brian Theriot, Shane Losey, Nathan Kaplan, amongst others. I think last time this happened, it was like 20-some people applied. So you'll have a chance to go in and make a pitch, city council, and they will vote and see who they want to be on and replace and fill Jimmy Hughes' seat. It's part of Utah law. They're doing the same thing in Hurricane today as well, as Nanette Billings makes her way out. By the way, if anybody's ever met Nanette Billings, she is the nicest person on the planet. Now, I'm a media guy. Of course, she's got to be nice to me. When I worked in music radio for a long time, the artists were always super nice to us. Working in the radio side, it was always the tour managers that would get grumpy with us, or the managers themselves. But she is the nicest ever. Nanette Billings, the nicest ever. She's got to win for nicest mayor ever. So that's going to be happening there today as well. So there'll be a whole process. It's all part of Utah law. It's pretty cool. I like that that people, anybody in the city, anybody that, what do they say? There's some eligibility things you have to meet to make this work. So I'm excited for it. I'm going to go down there today. I'm going to be down there. I'm going to check it out. I've never been a part of something like this. I'm certainly not running. I'm going to be here talking about it because that's what I do. That's what I do best is running my yapper. But I want to go check it out today. I saw Jimmy last week with his wife, Tawny, at a Utah Tech game, and he's ready. He feels like he's ready to go. He's got a big smile, ready to go. So that's happening today at noon, City Council Chambers. Jimmy Hughes will be our new mayor coming up at noon today. That's going to do it for me, Southern U Talk, with me, Dale Desmond. Thank you guys for texting in, for calling in. We'll see you guys tomorrow.